my director told us that our goal was to create every phone call and every client visit to turn that into a revenue generating visit. Well, if a woman comes in and she's pregnant, the only way we can do that is by selling her an abortion.
Right.
Because we don't do prenatal care. Planned Parenthood does not provide prenatal care at any of their clinics across the country. They don't do, you know, adoption services. They don't make money off of that. So the only way we could make money was to sell a woman an abortion. And we were given the directive to sell abortion.
Glad to have this next guest with us. Actually, was a recommendation by my wife who read this lady's book, Unplanned. You can find her at abbyjohnson.org. Not .com, .org. Get it right. Abby Johnson, thank you for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
I'm very glad to have you on the show. And like I said, okay, so full disclosure, I never lie to people and be like, I read your book. I've read excerpts, but my wife was enthralled. And
okay.
She was the one who said, you have to have her on. so, you know, we've had some pro-life people on the show before. And my wife knows all of them. She reads almost anything she can get her hands on. But there was something here that really touched her. Have you noticed a reaction from many people who've read your book that that sort of differentiates it, I guess, from a lot of the other sort of pro-life sites or books out there?
Yeah, I think one of the things is that because I used to be a pro-choice person, you know, and then writing a book kind of about being that person and being in the pro-choice movement, you know, my purpose was not to vilify them, but just to help people have an understanding of where they're coming from. Not saying that it's right. Abortion is absolutely wrong, but that, you know, we're not at war with these people that are working in the clinics or these people who are pro-choice. We're at war with the ideology, but not the people themselves. And so I think that was something that was new to the pro-life movement, mm-hmm. honestly, because they had for so long wanted to make enemies of the people who do support abortion.
Right. I think you're right. And I think, you know, we've talked about this. I think there's a time for that. I think there's a time to throw caution to the wind and offend people, and it's okay because you're offending the right people. And I think there are people who are not beyond reaching, and you need to understand the difference. And that's really sort of the skill, I guess, of expressing political ideology, is knowing how to walk that line in a way that's appropriate for your audience. So you worked at now, was it was Planned Parenthood, right? It wasn't just any abortion clinic.
That's right. Right. It was Planned Parenthood clinic. I was the director there. We were an abortion facility. I was there for 8 years.
Now, you say that you were an abortion facility. Does that mean that that was your designated purpose at this Planned Parenthood facility? Because we're told that, you know, it's a very small percentage of what Planned Parenthood actually does.
Yeah.
you don't agree, I can tell.
You know, it was we were there to – it's kind of a tricky question because we were there as a family planning clinic, mm-hmm. who provided abortions, okay? But the whole premise behind being a family planning clinic is to get women on a contraceptive method that will eventually fail them. We know that 54% of women having abortions were using contraception at the time they got pregnant. So the whole purpose is get them on a contraceptive method that will fail them so that we can make them abortion patients. So we're willing to be loss leaders, if you will, in the contraceptive movement because we will eventually sell them our big ticket item, which is abortion.
Now you say that, I want to be clear because I'm not necessarily against all contraception. I don't know where you end up. Now you say there you were actually encouraged to give them the less effective contraceptive available, or do you mean just mean contraception in general?
Well, we want to give them a contraceptive method that has a higher risk of failure.
Really?
Right? And what's going to have a higher risk of failure? Those that have higher human error failure rates, right? So birth control pill, I'm 35 years old. I can't remember to take a pill at the same time every day, right? A 14-year-old sure as heck is not going to remember to take a pill at the same time every day so that it's 99% effective, right? So put her on a pill that she's probably not going to take at the same time every day, that she's not going to know how to properly take. Eventually, she will get pregnant and then she will be one of our clients.
That makes sense. Now, a quick question, because you're going to have critics here. Was that actually outlined to you as an employee at Planned Parenthood, or was it just sort of an unwritten, well, we know that this contraception will eventually fail them, or did they say, listen, our goal is to get them on the big hook for abortion.
Yeah, well, we had an abortion quota that I've actually exposed because I have the document that showed where the quota was on our budget sheet. Mm-hmm. So we had a quota for abortion. So we were to sell abortion to women when they came in. Over 90% of pregnant women who enter Planned Parenthood will have an abortion. So
wait, what was that number?
Over 90%.
Over 90% of women who walk in through the doors will have an abortion.
Pregnant women.
Okay.
So the idea that they're there to offer options or referrals for other services is just a farce, because my director told us that our goal was to create every phone call and every client visit to turn that into a revenue generating visit. Well, if a woman comes in and she's pregnant, the only way we can do that is by selling her an abortion.
Right.
Because we don't do prenatal care. Planned Parenthood does not provide prenatal care at any of their clinics across the country. They don't do, you know, adoption services. They don't make money off of that. So the only way we could make money was to sell a woman an abortion. And we were given the directive to sell abortion.
So it's the Glengarry Glen Ross of dead babies. ABC always be closing. That was from the top down. Not to make abortion jokes, but we have to actually do, otherwise I get horribly uncomfortable with serious topics.
You
knew what you were getting into.
I got it. Yeah. I follow you. Yeah.
No, that's exactly it. And I talked about that with Planned Parenthood, their website. The highest quality health services at the lowest possible prices. This was the first video I ever did that went, you know, semi-viral. I think at the time it maybe got 30,000 plays. And we did, Crazy Pete's Abortion Barn. And it was Planned Parenthood as a dirty used car salesman, because I thought back then, not knowing what you're saying now, that it just seemed like scummy, greasy, dirty car salesman. And you're telling me that behind the scenes, that was the goal. Abortion quotas. And it sounds terrible. And people are like, well, how are you making light? Using humor is not making light of a situation. It's shining a light on the situation. I mean, how else do you – abortion quotas, it's so laughable. It's horrifying.
Right.
I can't believe that they actually gave that to you as a directive. Okay, we'll come back here from this break. Because I want to talk about your turning point, and that's what my wife and I talked about for a long time. Lotta with Crowder, abbyjohnson.org. Stay tuned. Back with Abby Johnson, abbyjohnson.com, of the book Unplanned. Listen, my wife loves this book, and she talked about something, Abby, you know, to get a little serious here. She talks about your turning point. I don't want to give anything away for the listener, but you pinpointed it to a very specific moment, which I thought was pretty impactful. You want to talk about that?
Yeah. So after working there for 8 years, I mean, I was the director, so I wasn't, in the room very often for medical procedures or anything like that. We had a visiting physician come in from out of town who was performing abortions at my facility. Abortion, Planned Parenthood's protocol and the National Abortion Federation, their protocol for abortion is that it be done in a blind manner. So they have a suction tube that's hooked up to the machine, and they just blindly poke around inside the woman's uterus until they think they have enough tissue in a jar. So that was the way that I knew abortion to be performed day in and day out. But this doctor actually used an ultrasound at his own practice during the abortion so that he could see what was taking place inside the woman's womb, because shockingly enough, it is safer if a doctor can see what he's doing while he's performing surgery, right?
I don't know that I agree with the premise, but continue.
So that was something I never really thought about before. So he said that, you know, if time permitted, that he would have me come in so I could assist. My job during the abortion was to hold the ultrasound probe on the woman's abdomen so that he could see what was going on during the abortion. And I watched a 13-week-old baby fight and struggle for his life during that abortion procedure. And I knew then that I had been lied to. I knew that because of that, I had in turn lied to thousands of women who had come through my facility. I estimate that I helped to provide about 20,000 abortions during my time with Planned Parenthood. So I knew I had to get out. I knew I had to leave. And that was when I made the decision to quit.
How soon did that occur after that moment with the ultrasound?
I left about a week later.
Okay. So it was. Sometimes people will go back and they go, oh, I had my sort of come to Jesus moment, and you realize, well, it didn't really happen. So this was literally within the week you were gone.
Yeah. And I didn't want to leave my job because I made a ton of money at Planned Parenthood. And all of my friends were there. So I didn't want to leave. I was trying really hard to make it okay in my mind, you know, what I had seen. Sure. But after a week, I was just like, I can't do it. I can't make this right in my mind.
Are you still friends with any of them?
No, they testified against me in court, actually, so we don't really talk anymore.
Yeah, that can kind of put a damper on the whole friendship.
Yeah.
Now, how did they testify against you? What was it?
Well, 3 weeks after I left Planned Parenthood, they took me to court, and they were concerned that I was going to share proprietary information about the organization, which – that was a reasonable concern for them.
Let's be honest.
Yeah, that was a concern. you know, you can't sue somebody for becoming pro-life. And I had never signed any sort of confidentiality statement while working there. So they lost, and that's it.
Well, even then, though, it would seem in most cases, and you can tell me I'm out of line here, friends, people who are your friends, you develop these strong relationships. Generally speaking, if it comes down to siding with a corporation or an organization or a friend, they would side with the friend. So what do you think was such a strong pull that they decided to support Planned Parenthood, the organization, to come against you, Abby, the person, in court?
Yeah, I think money. I think they were concerned about losing their job. They were higher level employees with Planned Parenthood, so I think that was certainly a concern. I mean, they didn't know that this would happen, but after they testified against me, they actually got fired. So, it might have been different if they would have been able to see ahead to that. But
why were they fired?
I don't know.
It's because they were crappy witnesses?
I guess so. Yeah.
That's a weird reason to be fired, but I'm glad they were. I'm not contesting it, but that's a weird reason to be fired.
No, I know. I mean, I'm glad that they were fired too, but,
the problem is, it just gets replaced. So let me ask you this. When you see, you know, I've talked about this with my producer, actually, who's not here right now, Fundip, who is liberal socially, but incredibly pro-life. When you see the political football being played with the issue of abortion and Planned Parenthood comes in the news, I mean, right, the defense is always from the left. No. It's not about abortions. They provide health care to millions of women in this country who would otherwise never be able to afford it. The right is just – this is their anti-woman sexist crusade. What do you think when you hear that?
You know, Planned Parenthood does not provide any services in regard to women's health care that low-income women cannot get from any other federally qualified health center – rural public health center, hospital system, or Medicaid provider in their city. There is not one place where Planned Parenthood is located where there are not multiple other options for her to get health care if she's low income. And believe it or not, Planned Parenthood is not always that inexpensive. I mean, sometimes women are having to pay anywhere from $50 to $175 for, you know, to get an annual exam with Planned Parenthood. Sometimes not, but sometimes they do.
How much would an abortion cost in comparison?
It starts at about $400.
Okay. So even the abortions aren't necessarily inexpensive.
No. No,
what if someone can't afford it?
We would give them tips on how to raise money for their abortion.
Okay. So it's not like an emergency room where you have to serve them anyway and then...
No.
Okay.
No, you have to pay. In fact, if a woman came in...
They're not even altruistic in their abortion providing. It still comes down to the dollars.
No, they're not charitable. Come on. We would, this is like really heinous, but this is true. When a woman would come in, we would take her payment based on, her last cycle. So we would say, okay, we think based on your last cycle, you're 8 weeks and 5 days pregnant, right? Well, if we got them back to the room for their abortion and we did the ultrasound and we found that they were actually, let's say, 10 weeks and 1 day pregnant, well, there's a price difference between 8 weeks and 10 weeks, $100 price difference. So Somebody, usually the last person hired, would be tasked to go into the room while the woman's on the table and say, hey, you're a little bit further along than what we thought you were. So we're going to need to collect $100 extra before we can start your abortion procedure. Oh, and then we would be like, is it down in your purse? Do you want me to grab it for you? Or does your boyfriend have it out front? Or how do you want to take care of that?
I've been hustled in the streets of New York more politely.
Yeah.
Literally. For a bag of M&Ms. I'm not joking. That's a true story. It cost $2 for a package. I ended up losing $20. But I had 5 bags of M&Ms, so I guess it ended up...
There you go.
Okay. Yeah. My cousins never let me forget it. That is unbelievable. So, okay. So it's all, again, Glengarry Glen Ross. It's all about the upsell, right? It's like, do you want the large popcorn? Pay an extra $100 for your abortion. Where do you line up politically for those listening? Were you to the left before, and did you shift your whole political ideology, or just in the life issue?
You know, I was definitely as left could be when I worked at Planned Parenthood.
Right.
It was funny when I first started getting calls about doing media interviews, and you know, I got a call to go on Bill O'Reilly's show, and I called my parents, who are very conservative, and I was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to go on Fox News. And my mom was like, you hate Fox News. And I was like, yeah, I think maybe I'm going to start watching it now. But you know, a lot of things changed in my life. So, you know, I'm probably too liberal for most conservatives. I'm too conservative for most liberals. I follow a consistent life ethic. So I'm against the death penalty, against abortion, against assisted suicide. So that kind of has me fall in the middle.
Okay. That makes sense. So then you would have a better perspective as someone who is pro-life. I do say this, though. Since you're pro-life, would you agree with me? I say, listen, there are open-handed issues, there are closed-handed issues. I could vote for a Democrat in a local election because there are pro-life Democrats in a local election who don't, you know, they don't have the control to increase the size of the federal government, you know, and local municipalities have the right to do public schools. That's within their right.
Sure.
But I do think that if you are pro-life, if you believe that is a life, it precludes you from supporting the Democrat platform in a national election. Am I out of line?
No, I think you're absolutely right, because, I mean, you're right. The state and local elections, I mean, I have, you know, I have pro-life Democrat friends who, you know, I'd happily vote for. But when it comes to, you know, a federal election, national election, I hate it. You know, I wish it wasn't that way. I wish it wasn't such a party issue, but, no, I mean, you've got the Democratic Party who's trying to take God out of their platform, who is trying to make abortion one of the top, you know, issues in their platform. I mean, how can you?
It's women's health. Careful with your language now.
Right. I'm sorry. Women's health.
Don't make me be sexist and correct your self-loathing womanness.
But now, like, now we have a new push. Like in Washington, D.C., there's these clinics called CareFem, and they are proud.
Oh, I saw them. The abortion spa. Abortion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I know. They were like, abortion.
They're like, abortion? Yeah, we do that. They're not trying to hide behind that.
That showed the disgusting broads drinking tea talking about their uteruses.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, I don't really want to talk about uteruses, even if it is non-abortion related. I think that makes me sexist, but just a personal opinion. I don't necessarily want to.
Yeah. It's okay. You're a guy.
I don't want to talk about uteruses.
Talk about uteruses either, so it's okay.
I don't think you particularly want to talk about my scrotum. I think it's fair.
I don't. That is fair.
But I do think I'm entitled to an opinion. For example, I'm sure you have very impassioned opinions on scrotums. Okay. Well, that's okay. You don't have to, but it's your right. this will never make air.
I could.
Well, that's one thing that really bothers me, right? No uterus, no opinion. It's not about your uterus. It's about that life. It's about that baby. And this is just one thing where they go, well, Republicans want to tell you what you can do with your body. In no other instance, none, does the Republican Party platform. You might have some individuals, you know, like Dick Morris in your feet or something like that. But no actual Republican platform has an interest in a lady's body in any other facet aside from what it has to do with that life. They don't want to have an opinion on whether you can buy contraception, whether you can shave your legs, whether you can work it. None of it. shouldn't that show people that it's not really about taking your body?
To be perfectly honest, the Republican Party is not really interested in what you're doing with your body. We're more interested in what you're doing with the body of the innocent person that's in your womb.
Exactly.
That's what we're interested in. You can do whatever you want to with your body. You can go pierce it up. You can get a bunch of tattoos. Do whatever you want. But
does Planned Parenthood do piercings? Does Planned Parenthood do piercings? Never mind. Don't answer that. We have to go to a break, but I'll bring you right back. Okay. Abby Johnson, abbyjohnson.com. Stay tuned. Back with Abby Johnson. I'm surprised she stayed after all of that nether region talk beforehand. But you have to talk about it when you're dealing with abortion. I mean, feminists are so ugly in their language right now. And the truth is you have people out there like Patricia Heaton. You have people who are genuinely strong women who support women in selling their personalities, in putting on display their talents and their skills as opposed to their body. And there really is a tie-in between the abortion issue and what we sort of call third wave feminism. Have you noticed now, I guess sort of being more middle of the road, the pushback on this authoritarian feminism that you see from people at Planned Parenthood and CareFam, those kinds of campaigns?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think we're seeing a lot, you know, kind of this idea of like new feminism. We're seeing a push in that. And that's really exciting, actually. I mean, I have some friends that are pro-choice writers and, you know, they have told me, you know, Abby, if there's one thing that's going to flip this abortion movement on its head, it's going to be when women really embrace this idea of new feminism, that, you know, women don't have to choose between being a mom and having a career, right? We can have both, and that we're not just breeders, that we have more to contribute to society than just our ability to have children, you know, which is amazing, but we're not just that.
But no
right?
one
we're
thinks of you moms. That. I'll tell you something. Men don't think of you that way at all, particularly the pro-life men who tend to respect women much more. Listen, a pro-life man doesn't get to check out and say, sorry, sweetheart, go have it sucked down a tube. They have to assume responsibility for that woman. So I'm just saying it, not to derail the conversation, but I have tons of guy friends. Never once does a conversation go, hey, now that the women are wrong. They're going, aren't you just so glad that we have a bunch of walking uteruses waiting on us hand and foot to make sandwiches? It never comes up. And there's been actually, just like there's been more racial division in this country, there's been more gender sexual division, I think, than ever, because there's a rejection of this from these supposed men's rights activists, which are kind of silly too, and this third wave feminism. And it sounds like you, maybe even some pro-choice friends that you have, are somewhere in the middle where you can find reason.
Yeah, and I think they hate it. Honestly, they hate that this idea of new feminism makes sense, this pro-life feminism. They hate that that makes sense to them because it completely goes against the traditional feminist model, right? That there is no equality between the sexes, that, you know, women should be ahead of men, that it's not about equality, that it's this us versus them.
But if you're ahead of men, then we have rape culture and that's a whole other problem. So
a whole other thing, right? Yeah. We need to do another show about that.
Yeah. We need to figure out where exactly we need to be in the line, to just avoid the rape culture and, the retroactive non-consent is a big issue now.
Right.
I want to ask you this now. Are you familiar with I'm sure Anne McElhinney and the Gosnell movie that they're doing?
Yes.
So we had her on the show, and she talked about the horror stories of Gosnell.
Yep.
Now, she contends that obviously he's terrible, and they're doing a movie on it because it was a national story, but that it's not that far off from what's probably happening at some other abortion clinics across this country. We're not talking about the sanitary conditions, but how far along the trail they actually do abortions, how it's just a chop shop, boom, in and out. How much in common do you think someone like Gosnell would share with the general American abortion doctor, maybe at Planned Parenthood?
You know, I don't think a whole lot, honestly. I mean, yes, I think Gosnell was, I do think that he was a rare sort of, he was running a sort of rare kind of operation. There are others like him. We know that Douglas Carpin in Houston, who's no longer practicing as an abortionist, you know, we know that he was doing the same sorts of things. We know that Pendergraph is doing those sorts of things. Carhartt, you know, it's these later term abortionists, those that are willing to do abortions into the third trimester. Because let's be honest, I mean, if you're willing to do abortions into the third trimester, you're probably kind of shaky on morality in the first place.
But
so,
not to people like Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah, well. Yeah, but I think a lot of people, even pro-choicers I know, were just appalled by what they saw in the Gosnell trial. And, you know, I've talked to people who were actually there who are pro-choice writers who mm-hmm. said, you know what, hearing about what took place inside of the clinic, that made me really question what's going on in, you know, made me question the humanity of the unborn child, which is good.
Well,
so
I think that's an interesting point there. So let me ask you, Elizabeth Warren, Jared, do you remember the name of the other, Wendy Davis. Sorry, they're almost interchangeable in my mind as just sort of the anti-baby cackling witches. And I mean witches. I don't mean the other word. I mean witches. Cackling witches. Take it in context. Who believe in abortion pretty much on demand, free. I mean, you saw the tussle with Rand Paul and Elizabeth Warren.
Yes.
So you say a lot of your pro-choice writers or a lot of pro-choice people in the country were appalled at that. But you didn't see the outrage from HuffPo, from liberal websites.
Right.
And you don't see the outrage in third trimester abortion from Democrat politicians. So do you think that that's an issue where the elite are so much further along the trail that people, the general pro-choice person in this country, can be reached still effectively?
Yeah. So here's the thing. So anybody that's in leadership inside the pro-choice movement,
right,
they cannot deviate from abortion on demand without apology, right? They cannot. You cannot start saying, well, okay, I think abortion's okay here until 24 weeks, or I believe abortion's okay if it's done this way, but not that way, right? Because then you, pro-lifers can really easily start to pick apart your argument. So for them, for people who are really leading this charge, I mean, this was how it was for me at Planned Parenthood. I mean, you cannot deviate from the plan of legal abortion anywhere at all times without exception through all 9 months of pregnancy.
That's a good point. So you're saying even if those people in leadership may agree with those points that, hey, come on, you're talking about a third trimester abortion, they would, behind closed doors, you think, say, yeah, I agree, but they publicly cannot deviate from the game plan?
Yeah, they cannot. I mean, I remember when I worked at Planned Parenthood just thinking, okay, abortion's after 24 weeks. So it seems too far. You know, these babies are, they can survive out of the womb. They're viable.
Well, you're saying after 4 weeks, so we're not even close to the third trimester at that point. How often are abortions performed after 4 weeks in Planned Parenthood? Not third trimester, but, you know, 4 or 5, 6 week abortions.
Well, so most abortions are performed before 12 weeks.
Right.
So there's in the first trimester. So the overwhelming majority of abortions are performed in the first trimester.
Mm-hmm. So I was saying, I meant first month. My apologies. Yeah, I was going.
No, I got it. So then, you know, then there's a drop into second trimester abortions. And then there's an even more significant drop into third trimester abortions.
Sure.
So, you know, you're looking at maybe, you know, we think maybe about 20,000 babies are aborted in the third trimester in the United States every year.
That's still shocking.
I mean, it's a lot. Yeah, no, it's
a lot. I mean, that's a point where there's really no scientific debate as to whether it's potentially viable, as to whether it's an individual, as to whether they have nerve endings. There's no scientific debate at that point.
No.
So here's my point. So, and I've always said this, I think that with abortion, you know, sort of the Oprah soundbite is it's ultimately sacrifice at the altar of self. It's personal convenience, personal happiness is more important than this life. And I feel like, and I think you've reiterated that, I want to make sure I don't misrepresent you, there are people in the movement, we're at a point where it's not about women's rights. They do believe it's a life, especially as science comes in. They know it's a life. They don't care anyway. Is that unfair?
No, that's totally fair. I mean, I remember a pro-lifer asking me one time, you know, when do you think life begins? And I remember my answer just being like, well, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter when life begins because abortion is legal and I'm going to do everything I can to support legal abortion through all 9 months of pregnancy. That is not how I felt. That's not actually what I felt in my heart. That's not how I
right.
felt in my mind. But I could not stray from that talking point.
Why did you go into this? Why did you feel passionately enough about this to do it?
You know, I've had two abortions myself. So, About 70% of people that work in the abortion industry have had abortion. So I think a lot of it is just kind of justifying your own past behavior or your own past mistakes. But I mean, honestly, I was just very naive. I was a college student. I didn't know anything about Planned Parenthood. And, you know, when this woman is telling me how they serve these, you know, uninsured or underinsured women, and they're the only hope for these women if they need health care. I mean, it just sounds really, it sounds like Planned Parenthood is this benefactor to the masses. Sure. And that was something that I was interested in helping with.
Okay. So your heart was in the right place. Maybe the mind took a little while to catch up.
Just very misguided.
That makes sense. And I think there are a lot of people out there like you. And like I said, I think there are people, the Elizabeth Warrens, the, I just forgot her name again. I just forgot her name. The text, Wendy Davis. Gosh, I can never remember it. You know why? It's just like a generic white lady name.
Right. Yeah.
It's like, are you saying we all our names are alike? Yeah, I guess it's anti-white racism. It's Wendy Davis. It's like,
Crowder's racist.
Yes, exactly. Against white women. So those people are beyond reaching. You kind of have to make an example of them. But there are people like you out there who are maybe not quite far along, far enough along the trail. And I do think Abby Johnson's book, Unplanned, is a great way to start. AbbyJohnson.org. Unplanned, much like our private part discussions in this interview. Abby, thank you so much for being with us. Sorry, did I miss anything? Any closing words here that I missed?
No, I don't think so. Oh, well, just so you know, you're talking about conversion, you know, and how we can convert minds. I actually run an organization that reaches out to abortion clinic workers and helps them come over to the pro-life side. And we've had 160 workers come to us. So there are a lot of people who are working in these clinics, who want to leave, who are looking for an excuse to leave, and they just need a hand. They just need a hand up so that they can get out. And that's what we've been able to provide. And 160 of those workers, were six of them were abortionists that are now no longer performing abortions. So it can happen.
Okay. Well, thank you, Abby. But you must go peddle your anti-woman sexist propaganda elsewhere, AbbyJohnson.org.
Yes.
You must go. Thanks for being with us. Stay tuned to Louder with Crowder. More after we keep the lights on with these sponsors. If you enjoyed this video, congratulations. You stumbled into the dark corner of the internet that wasn't plastered with breasts. And you could subscribe by clicking my face or watching one of these videos next to me. Do they or do they not have breasts? I don't know. Even a crack.